What's up with coffee and addicts, bro?
I used to do piles of cocaine. This is, you know, this is nice. This
so is warm. Nice. We're always making coffee, aren't we? We always talk about this.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's nice to have an outreach, something to enjoy. Good. You've taught me a lot about coffee.
Well, it's also cool when it's cooler outside. I mean, today is fairly warm for Albuquerque, but I mean, we're in the 60s today, but it's still cool to have something that's like a warm beverage when it's cold outside.
Absolutely.
And it's cold at night, you know, here.
Warm your insides.
Speaking of warming your insides, in humility.
Oh, boy.
So I want us to go back into what we were talking about the last episode, is this is kind of almost a continuation of it.
Yes.
Is looking at our defects of character and then this ability for God to come in and remove those. I always picture like the blackboard or the whiteboard. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll do the whiteboard with the marker and then you can spray it, then clean it, and it's all the marks are gone. You know, it's like all these defects of character. And only God can remove them. And thinking about that is a miracle. Removing. Mm-hmm. Like, he can remove them. What do you mean? Yeah, he's that big.
Right. Like,
he can remove them. That's pretty heavy duty. Well, you can handle my addiction. How big is God? Oh, he's got you and your addiction. Mm-hmm. He can handle everybody's addictions. But to think that he can remove, you know, the Bible talks about this as far as like removing the sins from the east from the west, like removing, like you're redeemed, like you're a child of God, you're saved, you know, all these different terminologies we use, but it's that, it's like he remembers no more.
Absolutely.
Like, you know, and as addicts, I think not understanding exactly the miracle that's happening.
I think often too, we come in so broken. We come in so broken, ashamed, humiliated, and the idea of a transformation is just so foreign. It's like, what do you mean I can be redeemed? There's redemption for me. I'm trying not to die. I really want not to die.
Right.
And so the hope that's in this spiritual development, the transformation that is available for everybody who's willing to seek it. Mm. So powerful. I didn't know that I would get a big life from a recovery practice. I really was just doing what I thought would work to not die. Mm. And I had no idea that there was going to be this transformative, responsibility-taking journey that I was going on, especially in regards to my character defects, especially in regards to the part of me that is nasty inside, the things I don't want anybody to know.
Which everyone has.
Absolutely, everybody has this.
Whether you say you're an addict or not, it doesn't matter. We all have them.
You got character defects, yeah.
Do you feel like when we look at our character defects, especially when it's in the form of addiction, because I think addiction, no matter what it is, I heard an old statement saying a long time ago, like if you have character defects and you put money into it, it just makes them worse.
Mm, sure.
You know, so like if you're an alcoholic and then all of a sudden you're a rock star, well, you drink yourself, you've thrown up all of yourself and drink yourself and you die.
Yeah.
You know, Jim Morrison, I mean, there's a lot of people at the Doors. There's a lot of people that did that in the 70s and 80s.
Oh, absolutely. I had, so Jim Morrison, Janis Joplin, Jimi Hendrix, all had 8-year drinking careers, partying careers after they got sober. Excuse me, after they got famous. After they got famous.
Mm-hmm.
So after they got famous, they had money. They could party and drink as much as they wanted. And after 8 years, their body shut down.
Mm.
They died from their addiction, from their partying. I had an 8-year drinking career. I drank for 8 years, as much as I could, as often as I could, and my body was dying. It couldn't take anymore. The human body can only take so much. And for a lot of us, you know, there was also an experimentation with outside, with other stuff, with drugs, with cocaine, with speed, with heroin. You know, I didn't do any of that, so I did a lot of cocaine. So it's interesting to say now, 14 years later, I'm grateful for the drugs as well, because it exasperated the drinking.
I like that.
Took my addiction and turned the volume to 11.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe I got to forego 40 years of just drunkenness. Maybe my body got close to dying sooner because of the additional substances.
I love that.
Yeah. So if it's a very weird thing to say now. I didn't know that then, but I know now. I'm also grateful for the drug addiction, the drugs that I did, because that got me to a bottom quicker. It got me.
Yeah. What if it took you 25 years to get to a bottom?
I would have rather died.
Or you have some people, you know, we talked about this the other day. Some people will go through their whole life, never learn the lesson. Mm-hmm. And then they're 70, 75, 65, whatever.
Still drunk.
And still, but they've never had it where they've gone like super rock bottom.
Right.
You know, they've been able to, you know, I know somebody right now, doesn't live that far from here, that is functioning alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just goes to work, does their work, but they got the big red nose, big hard belly, you know, all the...
Capillaries,
and if you see them in the evening, they're always going to be drunk. They're always like overly happy in the evening. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But this is an older person that's been doing this for who knows how long. Yeah. That's not your body's toast, like literally, like toast, like
pickled,
yeah, pickled and toast. Whenever we look at this, though, and we see that there's this readiness to have God remove all these defects of character. So it's a readiness. And I think a lot of people aren't ready. They haven't made the decision. They haven't understood their addiction and where they're at. They're still playing the game.
Absolutely.
Because God can't do his magic, because he'll never go against your free will. So God can't do his magic. God's magic happens when there's humility.
Yes.
On our part.
Yes.
Well then said, then yes. Then it's allowed. Then the magic can come in, and then the removal happens. Mm-hmm. But until that access is given, he's a loving God. He's not going to force anything upon us. You know, why would we be puppets?
Right.
That makes no sense, you know.
Man, that's so powerful. The proper use of the will is to give it back to God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so hard to do, especially in addiction. I'm not going to do that. I run my head into the wall over and over and over trying to figure it out on my own. No, God, I got it. I'll figure it out. And I did that for years. I did it for 8 years.
God, I'm not worthy. Don't pay attention to me.
Very good. Yes, yes.
I'm just a drunk.
When I finally got into recovery, that was definitely the energetic space I was in surrounding my spirituality. I believed in something. I didn't know exactly what it was, but I knew that it didn't want anything to do with me because I was such a bad person, because I was so low. I was the lowest of the low.
Which was false humility, that's actually narcissism.
That's pride. That's pride in reverse. And that's very common.
Mm-hmm.
It's very common to be somewhat agnostic entering recovery and think, God, I believe in something, but I know it wants nothing to do with me.
We were talking about this earlier at the gym. It's like this anger towards God. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, like, well, fuck God. Why did he make me an addict?
Right.
Why did God do this to me? You know, or I prayed to God and nothing happened. You know what I mean? There's always those statements. There's people listening right now that have done that.
Guaranteed.
They may be, I guarantee you in your addiction, you've cried out to God at some point if you're at a low.
For sure.
And then nothing happens. You know, that no one gets the Paul on the Damascus Road where God comes down and shines a light on him, you know, and the next thing you know, he's blinded and, you know, and he, or Moses.
Moses,
you know,
in the burning bush.
It's like, well, hell, I didn't get an angel or St. Michael come see me. I just prayed and cried out to God and gave him my all, and then nothing happened.
Yeah, a white light experience, a burning bush experience, very rare, very rare. Some people do get to have that, but it's very rare. Usually spiritual experiences of the educational variety, like ours, and that just means it takes time. That means that I have to learn over time. I have to be willing to practice. We like to say faith without works is dead. So if I'm not willing to take action.
Yes, yes, yes.
Then my faith means nothing. My prayer means nothing if I'm still pouring alcohol down my throat.
But people don't realize the addiction is the burning bush.
Mm.
They're looking for something that's already there. Because if you didn't have, like you said earlier, if you didn't have the addiction, where would you be at now?
Bro, that is so
the addiction is the burning bush.
That's why I like doing a podcast with Jason. This guy can bend space and time.
No, it has nothing to do with that. It's
Jason,
like
when Jason folds time and explains that your addiction, the thing that's kicking your ass, is the burning bush in your life, is the God reaching out to you that can alchemize this recovery experience where later down the road you have a connection with a higher power mm-hmm. because of that addiction.
So you know what? When you're around your addiction, you need to take your shoes off because you're on holy ground.
Holy ground. Nice. Take your shoes off. Man, that's profound. Humility. That is profound. That is humility. And that's the recognition of something bigger than myself.
Because we don't see the outcome.
No. No. That's what I mean. You're bending space and time. Mm-hmm. The outcome is I get closer to God, but I don't know that mm-mm. when I'm drinking a bottle.
Yeah, when you're going to the meeting suffering. For the first time and you're suffering and you're just trying not to drink, because you've told me story after story about that. It's like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I'm just here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying not to drink. I feel fucking, I can't even be in my own skin.
Correct.
It just feels disgusting.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you become self-aware enough where you're understanding that you're, you know, you're the greatest gift you'll ever have in your whole life is your addiction.
Yeah.
It's like now you can see it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of the educational variety. It takes time.
You wouldn't have anything that you have in your life now if it wasn't for your addiction to propel you to where you were at.
Exactly.
The addiction said, okay, here you go. Now you're a multimillionaire.
I believe that.
You may have been like working with your parents on construction.
Wrote, I would have died. I wouldn't have had anything. So the statement you just made is 1,000% true for me. I believe that more than I believe anything else, that I would not have anything in my life if it wasn't for my addiction. But it was my addiction that propelled me in the direction of spiritual development.
It's also if God gave his son a cross to bear.
Yes.
Who do you think you are?
Mm-hmm. You just think you don't have a cross?
Then what did Jesus do to the cross? He alchemized it.
He transformed it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's your addiction. You know, it's turning it from a cross to the burning bush.
Very good.
You know, and then God, then what happens is like you, how many people have you helped in the last 13 years?
You too.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. You've helped me. You've helped tons of people.
No, I mean, I've helped people too.
Yes, yeah, and we're helping people by doing this podcast. But, and you know, we want to hear your stories and stuff and leave comments. You guys have been doing good with that. DM us on Instagram. But the main thing that we can do is have the full recognition that no matter how you feel in your narcissism, God is at work.
Very good.
He's always at work.
And he doesn't care how you feel.
And you know what? A universe just happened. Wow, he just expanded a huge part of planets and everything just all mm-hmm. just.
And all I want to do is stop drinking.
Yeah. I think he's got you.
Yeah.
I think God's got you.
That's very well said. The if I'm connected to the power that creates worlds, you and entire universes, I think that same power could help me get sober. It could create that.
I wonder if it could remove my character defects.
So powerful. So powerful. Yes, it could. Especially if it can remove my obsession.
Yes.
For alcohol. Why wouldn't it help any other place? Why wouldn't it be just as powerful for any other problem?
A character defect is an obsession on something that is not of God.
This is why.
What is of God, but it's like.
This is why, bro.
Yeah, it's a separation.
Yes, I got you. This is why we like to say a recovery journey. Because just not drinking, that's not enough for me. There's a difference between not drinking and being free. So I'm not drinking today. But I could still be a selfish asshole. I could still be a judgmental prick.
Well, you're talking about that with you were eating clean.
I could still be terrified. Yeah, all or nothing. But I could still be terrified and fearful.
It's like you're eating perfect.
Yeah.
Super clean. Your abs are showing, but you're walking around like, don't fucking talk to me.
Angry and frustrated, and I'm all or nothing. I was all or nothing with my diet.
But I mean, I'm saying that's exactly what you're saying. This is so important. For addicts, because the focus is the not drinking.
Right, right. But
I don't want to drink today.
Right.
But that's not, that's only part of it.
That's the entry level stuff. Like once you start evolving, you get deeper into recovery. Mm. Now we're talking about the meat and potatoes. This is the daily shit. This is the shit I have to do all the time.
I love this.
So I'm not just I'm not drinking anymore, but I'm a selfish asshole. How do I get help with being a selfish asshole?
Mm-hmm.
Can I start focusing on having some serenity, some inner peace? How do I alchemize these character defects? If going through life angry, pissed off, and sober is the only option, I'm out. I don't want that.
Yeah.
I would rather not live that. So I want to go, if my decision is to enter a recovery program and go through life sober, I better enjoy it. Mm-hmm. I better have some inner peace involved. It better be worth the journey.
I think it's this whole Western culture of, You stay in a shitty marriage for 50 years. You stay in a shitty job till you retire, and then you die 5 years after you retire. Mm. You know, misery loves company. You know, it's like I don't know how to have, and we've talked about this so many times. I don't know how to have love. I don't know how to have abundance. I don't know how to have success. The only thing I know is if I focus on myself and worry all the time and have fear, I can be super miserable, right. And I can say fuck everybody.
Right.
Now, I could do a lot of things in the fuck everybody. I can go to the gym. I can look amazing. I can not drink a bottle. I can not go to McDonald's drive through. I can not go to the casino. I can not fuck around on my husband or wife or whatever. And like you said, how do you deal with the selfish asshole? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the hard part.
Well, this is the daily work.
That's the transformation.
Yes, this is the daily work. So there are different tools. One is getting very specific, even writing down
the character defects, right?
Let pen meet paper, mm-hmm. and have the character defects be there black and white in front of my face. There are plenty of guides and gauges to help individuals do this. So find a modality that works well for you. One modality that we're forever familiar with and that works well for me is the seven deadly sins.
Yes.
So if I'm not too... I know that I'm behaving badly, and I know that I feel uncomfortable inside, but I don't know much else. This helps shine a magnifying glass on the root issue, on the real nitty gritty stuff that we said when we opened. Is, you know, I don't want to look at that stuff. Mm. This is what's kicking my ass. And when I drank, this is what was masked.
Yes.
I didn't have to feel these feelings and deal with this bad behavior because I was participating in my addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm no longer participating in my addiction. I'm not drunk. I can't numb this shit out. It's coming to the surface.
Yes.
It's time to deal with it. If you want to heal, if you want to recover, you have to deal with these character defects. If you want to grow into the man or the woman that God intended you to be, you have to deal with these character defects. No more turning a blind eye.
I love this because you simplified it by saying the seven deadly sins. And I don't want us, we'll go into them specifically. And this is a Christian, if you want to call it theological thing, you know, Christian, Catholics, Protestants talk about.
Sure.
But it's more of a way to see, because to me, they're not separate. It's a web.
Mm-hmm.
They're
mm-hmm.
all interlinked. If you have envy, you're going to have lust, and then that's going to turn into pride.
Mm-hmm.
So they all are like a matrix of, and when you look at your addiction through this matrix, then you can begin to see through. It's like the story in, you know, the Matrix movie with the woman with the red dress.
Oh yeah.
Bet
you can't look at that.
The next thing you know, boom. Guy's standing there with a gun.
Gun to his head.
You know, and there's a lot of things in our life that are the red dress. The beautiful woman that's in the red dress.
Mm.
And you can say, don't look, but you're just going to look.
It's programmed.
Yes.
I'm programmed to look. I programmed myself.
Yeah. Yes. To look yes.
Because of my selfish, self-centered addiction. So, yes, I love that analogy. Yeah. These are red dresses. All of these sins are red dresses. One nice vernacular, the sin, you know, we don't care any religion you apply to or don't apply to. We're not here to bash any religion. We love religious practices. Mm-hmm. So whatever spiritual modality works for you, That's what we suggest you seek. You just seek. Your job in recovery is just to seek a spiritual practice that works well for you. I love Christian practices. I love Judeo practices. I love Catholicism. So anything that works well for the individual is what we care about. We don't care the specifics. And again, this is just, like you said, this is just one lens. This is just one way to look. This is just one modality to pull apart the parts inside of me that I don't like, the ugly parts inside of me that I used to drink over.
Yeah, I want to go through, because this is really important. You know, you've been studying with Jordan Peterson and been going over the Bible and yes. with Moses and stuff like that. And I said, like, the Bhagavad Gita I've studied, mm-hmm. that's amazing. You could study, you know, all these different modalities. So I don't want people to think this is like solely a Protestant podcast or something.
No, yeah.
But the Hebrew word is kata in the word sin that we call sin. But religion, like you said, has destroyed the meaning of what it is.
Right. The etymology. Go ahead and give us.
Yeah. So I wanted, and this is from BibleProject.com. So this is like, this is an actual Christian website. Kata simply means to fail or miss the goal. It says, when the Israelite tribe of Benjamin trained a small army of slingshot experts in the Bible,
yes.
they could sling a stone at a hare and not katata. So what that is, they could not miss.
Not miss.
Or there's a biblical proverb that warns against making hasty decisions because you're likely to katata your way or miss your destination.
Very good.
So missing the mark, missing your destination, that's what the word sin means. It's not some...
Yes,
evil.
No, it's not evil, and it's not you're going to burn,
mm-hmm.
and it's nothing like that. Thank you so much for saying that, Jay. That's what we're referencing when we say sin, seven deadly sins. I'm just missing the mark.
Yeah.
I'm not—
Of being my higher self.
Yes, I'm not living up to my potential.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not living up to the man I know I could be.
And when you miss the mark, the red dress, the lady in the red dress is your addiction. So it's like, there's a bottle.
God, I love her.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. There's a bottle.
That might be the worst analogy we could
do. Yeah. That would probably be.
What if
they did that on purpose?
The lady in red dress is holding a bottle.
Yeah, that's even worse.
Game over.
Yeah, game over.
However, but that's my programming. That's my selfishness. That's my conditioned behavior. I know the bottle works every time.
It's easy.
It's cakewalk. It's ingrained in my mind. So now we're starting to develop new neurological pathways.
Yes.
In the neocortex, we could give a little bit of history. Somewhere around 300 to 250,000 years ago, human beings had a growth in their neocortex. This is the new brain, the frontal lobe, the front part of the brain. That was probably, we don't know, but probably our ancestors, closest in ancestors being apes, that were obsessed with fire. And it was probably some ape obsessed with fire that started cooking meat.
Yeah, I've heard this. Yeah.
So the theory is, the evolutionary theory is, well, a larger source of protein became available for digestion.
Yeah, they also said in that time frame, psychedelics probably, like mushrooms.
Yeah, mushrooms.
So that bring you self-aware.
Yes, other things. Yeah, exactly.
But meat would be the main one.
So the protein increase in the diet enabled our neocortex to grow 20%. Our brain grew 20%. Our cranium did not.
Mm-hmm.
The brain, it grew so much, and it didn't have the space able to do it. It folded in on itself, which is
cool.
Why the brain looks the way it does today. Yes. It's like a bunch of folds. No other animal has ever had a 20% increase in brain capacity or size. And if the cranium continued to grow at the same rate our brains did 300,000 years ago, the birthing canal for women would have to be so large, they couldn't run. They could not, they would probably have to walk on all fours. So it was an evolutional necessity to have the brain fold in on itself to handle the increase in size in brain and tissue matter, because women had to outrun predators. We had to outrun predators. So the brain folded in on itself. So that's the evolutional psychology surrounding this increase in cranium prefrontal cortex, but also my capacity. Mm. What can we do with this frontal lobe, the new brain, my neocortex? I can create new neurological synapses with repetition. I have 35 years of conditioning in this meat suit to judge that motherfucker.
Yeah.
Judge that motherfucker. Drink that bottle. Drink that bottle. You won't have to think. Be mad at my boss. Be mad at my boss. Kick my dog. Kick my dog. Fuck this life. Conditioned, conditioned, conditioned. Our brain is big enough to create new neurological synapses. So I don't want to practice missing the mark anymore. That's what my old conditioned neurological pathways have done.
That makes
for
sense.
Years.
Yes.
I want to create a new neurological pathway aiming towards the best version of myself. I want to hit the mark. I want to be the man I know I can be.
That's so good. When you look at it too, and you go through, as we're looking at these seven deadly sins, I want us to get into the first one. And this is the one you'll see in the Garden of Eden. This is the one you'll see with Noah and his son. And that's pride. And it hinders, pride is a hindrance because it prevents us in our addiction from seeking help or admitting any type of weakness. Mm-hmm. You know, so when pride steps in with an addiction, when you remember when you were 20, 21, whatever it is, what did that look like with you with pride in your addiction? Were you feeling like, I got this, Dwayne can handle this, I'm a badass?
Exactly. The word I like to use is moxie. I knew I had some moxie. It's like, I could figure this out. Don't worry, I'll navigate this. I don't need anybody's help. Leave me alone.
I can party on the weekend.
Don't worry about me. I got this. And I ended up drunk and blacked out and bloody every time. Every time. That was as good as it got for me. If I had blood on me, that was a normal night. Yeah.
And you never know whose it was.
I didn't know if it was mine, if it was some guy. Who knows? And that's a horrific way to live. Mm-hmm. Waking up terrified. I did that over and over and over. And then it's also incumbent upon us to say, when I go down the rabbit hole enough with that destructive behavior, I no longer like the person I am. So then we start to experience pride in reverse. And you already talked about this, but this is very common for addicts, for alcoholics, for people who are shamed. We said it countless times. I'm not much, but I'm all I think about.
Yeah.
Exactly. I'm the worst thing on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. God doesn't want anything to do with me. Sure, he'd save people, but he wouldn't save me. I'm the lowest of the low.
Yeah.
And that's still pride. That's still me thinking about me. I'll figure it out. I got it. I got some moxie. But then the extreme version of that is, I'm the biggest piece of shit on planet Earth. And I'm still practicing pride. I'm still obsessed with me.
Yeah, it's almost like the service to self compared to service to others. You know, like I know in my pride, when I put myself first and I'm not thinking of others, I'm not thinking of serving others. I'm not thinking like, what's the best situation that I can be in this where I can show love towards my girlfriend or towards my parents or towards my children? You know, what is, and you're not thinking about that in your addiction. You're not saying, how can I love? You're thinking, why didn't my mom give me $40 like I asked?
Right.
Fuck her.
Right. Exactly.
Well, I'm going to go steal it out of her purse. I'm going to go, let's see what's in her medicine cabinet. Does she have any, let me look around.
Exactly right.
Let me see what I can steal. You know, to me, that's a form of pride because it's like, I want to put myself first in everything I do.
Yes.
And that was where in the Garden of Eden, as we know the story so well, that was what the snake played on with Eve, was you will be like God.
You will be like God.
You will have all the knowledge.
Not only will you know good and evil, but you will be like God.
I want to be like God. You know, and then she takes it, shares it with Adam. Adam partakes, and next thing you know, what happens? Yeah, you want knowledge? Okay, perfect.
Now you got to work, and you got to till the earth, and now you have to sacrifice the rest of your life.
Yes, and it's so funny. It's like whenever we're not dependent on God, whenever we're not seeing gratitude, and that's the garden, is gratitude.
Yes.
If I was communing with God, Adam was communing with God every day. He was talking directly to God. What else? He would walk the garden.
Good point. Very good point. What else happened when they ate the apple?
Separation.
They got kicked out of the garden.
Yeah, they got kicked out of the garden. They got
separate from God.
And that's what happens in my pride.
Bro.
That fellowship that I had with God is gone. Because I'm not putting God first. I'm not putting others first. I am so focused on me being God. Like it's me. I want to know. I want this. I need this. It's just, I mean, you have a 3-year-old, you know. I had 4 3-year-olds.
Yes. You raised 4 of them, yes.
But I mean, the 3-year-old is
completely selfish.
That's if you put a piece of candy right here.
His ego is developing.
He's going to obsess over that piece of candy. You tell him he can't have it and you leave. Leave for 30 minutes and see what happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's the same. Yeah. What's the difference between a 20-year-old Dwayne or a 20-year-old Jason compared to a 3-year-old?
Same.
I just know how to maneuver my pride better.
Correct. I have more life experience.
Yeah, I've developed.
Manipulating.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Where I can create so much drama or trauma that I can get exactly what I need, no matter the words that I need to say to fuck all the shit up.
Yep.
But in the moment, I'll make my mom cry just so I can get $40 from her. So
you get what I want.
I'll be like, Mom, I'm just getting gas money.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you give me gas money? I'm empty in my car. I need gas money.
So powerful, bro. I would never articulate with my words. Mom, your inner peace, your serenity, that means fuck all to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would never say that out loud with my words.
Mm-hmm.
But my actions, my pride said that all the time. I miss the mark bad.
Like not showing up on time for work. What are you doing? That's pride.
Yeah.
You're putting yourself first and you're like,
fuck this job.
Fuck the team. Fuck my boss. Fuck the job. I don't value it that much.
Correct. Don't you know who I am?
Yeah. And that's why I think it's really important when you look at value. That's so important. It's like, I'm not valuing my mom. Mm. I'm not valuing any relationship that I have because my pride is just an all-consuming, it's just enveloping in itself, you know, like this all-consuming black hole. Just it's sucking up galaxies all around me.
So we know that the alcoholic, the addict is the extreme version and we take things to the extremes too. So those are great examples, the extreme version of pride. Now there's no specific one answer that we're looking for here. In a ways you've already done it, Jay, but go ahead and alchemize it. Alchemize pride for me. What would be the reverse or what would be something like the reverse? We do want to stay out of the realm of, well, there's only one character asset.
Yeah, exactly.
For each character. Right. This is a broad spectrum of spiritual development and we don't want to use one term or any one idea. Mm-hmm. So what's one idea? What's one way?
Well, one thing would be what you do all the time is God help me with my pride. Just a quick little prayer to recognize.
Yes.
I mean, that's
yes.
so easy. It's like we can all say that prayer all the time. Like, God, help me with my pride.
The recognition of needing help is the reverse.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is the recognition. I'm inviting God into the situation. Mm-hmm. I'm acknowledging I cannot do this on my own. That would be the same as humility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm practicing humility. I'm practicing spiritual development. I'm practicing rewiring my neocortex.
Going to a meeting even though I don't want to. Going for a walk even though I don't want to.
Excellent.
All of these things are rewiring.
Fucking spot on, bro.
Yeah, that's the help.
This will retrain us into the person we want to be. It's a practice. It's a training. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. It's going to take fucking one foot in front of the other, one foot in front of the other. Take the next step. Take the next step. I love that. I love that.
Do you think the fear, the terrifying fear of going to a meeting, especially if it's your first one, because there's people listening that are at this level, is they need to recognize that fear is just another form of pride.
Yes.
Don't believe it as a fear.
That's great.
It's just because once the minute you look at it as like, that's just fucking pride again. God help me with this. This is pride. It's not fear. It's pride.
Good.
And in my hands may be shaking, but I'm going to open this fucking door right now. You know, I mean, and go in. Go sit down and shut the fuck up and just sit there, you know. And you've talked about this so many times. I mean, you do this.
Walk through that fear.
Yeah, but it's your ego pretending like it's fear, but it's really pride.
Absolutely.
Because why would you not go to a meeting and get help?
And then again, in the same idea, alchemize it, transform it.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Fritz, the creator of Gestalt Therapy, discovered that inside of the brain, there's a chemical reaction that takes place when an individual is in fear. Now, the same chemical reaction inside the brain takes place with excitement. It's just excitement has oxygen involved in the chemical reaction in the brain, and fear does not. So a nice helpful tool for me is, that's not fear. What is that? Big breath. Invite oxygen into the situation. Mm-hmm. That's not fear. What is that?
Excitement, yeah.
That's excitement. Mm-hmm. That's not fear. Oh my God, I'm walking into a meeting to transform my whole entire fucking life and get something worth living. That's not fear. What is that? That's excitement.
That's great.
I'm excited to change. I'm excited to be reborn. I'm excited.
You're living proof of this.
I'm excited to have a life worth living, bro. I like waking up.
You went to meetings and changed your life.
I like waking up in the morning.
Yeah.
I look forward. Exactly. I spring out of bed at 3 in the fucking morning so I can get on the bike and pray. I love waking up in the morning. However, that's not fear. Mm-mm. That's excitement. So it's very easy to get those two emotions confused if I'm not breathing.
Do you feel like when there's a craving, we would call that a weakness, that there has to be an admission of that to God, like admitting your weakness? Like, God, I'm feeling really weak right now.
Oh, yes. Yes.
I need your help.
I think that there are ways we can grin and bear it, but I don't think we have to. And if I am willing to admit my weakness, if willing to ask for help, mm-hmm. I do that all the time, even just when I'm tired.
Yeah, I heard somebody talk the other day, and it was so beautiful. They were like, I mean, you have St. Michael right there, but they were like, pick an angel and have a prayer to the angel.
Yeah.
Like, pick one that you love, like, study the archangels and stuff like that, because it's a collective conscious. I believe it's like, the archangels are like a collective conscious that are higher beings.
That's cool.
You know, like whatever, but everybody has a thing. Or maybe they are an actual archangel with God in heaven. Who knows? But it's really cool to do that, because then it's kind of like, I got this motherfucker that's got my back.
Yeah, totally.
Like, you do that with St. Michael.
I love St. Michael. Yeah, this is like big medicine for me.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm really in the shit, I pray the prayer to St. Michael.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, it's like, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, it's so awesome. Or get a necklace. You know, like, you could buy them cheap on Temu or whatever for $2.
Yes.
Get a necklace or a ring or a pendant
reminder,
to put on
a reminder.
You. And then be like, I'm feeling weak right now. I need your strength, Archangel. You know, or whatever it may be. Whatever you pray to. Like, if you keep a rock or something. I have these little crystals
the rocks,
and shit.
Yeah.
I have them sitting right here. Sometimes when I'm getting angry in a meeting, I take this little heart. Or this heart, you know, and I'm like, let me show love, you know, and there's just a rock that looks like a heart. But, and I can just hold it in my hand and be like, keep your fucking mouth shut, Jason.
That's so cool.
You know, show love. But there's so many things that you can do. There's so many ways to alchemize pride.
Yep.
And the cool part is when you do it, it builds on itself and it scales. So as you begin to alchemize pride, you gain more confidence. It's like going to the gym and doing repetitions that you talked about a year earlier, doing those repetitions. Then it's like laying, now I'm starting to lay brick by brick by brick for my journey.
Yes.
You know, so now I'm like, oh, okay, shit, I just built a foundation. What the fuck? I'm building a fucking house here, you know, for my higher self. And then it's like, oh, damn. Now I got to put windows in and shit. You know, it's like, next thing you know, a year into this, 2 years into this, like you said, you had that realization at the pool, which is so amazing. It's like, holy shit, for 2 weeks, I didn't think about drinking.
I haven't even thought about it. Didn't enter my mind.
And you're like, that's alchemy. That's God.
Yes.
What did we talk about earlier?
Removal.
God removing.
It literally was gone from me. It was plucked out of me. I didn't do that.
That's a miracle.
Removed. It was a absolute miracle. It's the biggest miracle I've experienced, many in recovery, but that is definitely the biggest.
But that's the surrender that leads to the transformation.
Because
the surrender has to happen, and that's the removal of the pride.
Absolutely.
In the Bible, if you look at all the stories, or you go down through history with Greek gods or whatever, pride has always fucks up everything.
Right before the fall.
Yeah, if you look at Greek gods in the stories, you're going to be in Rome in a month, in a week. When you look less than that, Monday, Tuesday, or whatever. When you go there, you can see all these like gods, Roman gods. All the stories are when they get prideful.
Yep.
They start thinking they're a badass. Somebody sneaks in and takes them out, you know, or humbles them or whatever, you know. So let's get to the next one. Is greed.
Greed.
This is one I have a problem with, especially when it comes to money. But it fuels an insatiable craving. And it's not just an addictive substance of a craving that we want to hoard or to keep, but it's also behavior. Like, I want to have this plus this. I don't want to have just a wife. I want to have a wife and five girlfriends.
Right.
I want to have 12 donuts.
Right.
I'm not going to have one. This is greed. I want to have, I want your money and your money and your money in my bank account. Yep. And you can have zero. That's fine. But I want it all.
Yeah. One nice definition of an alcoholic or an addict is, I've just always wanted more than my fair share.
And I don't want to earn it.
And we also call that the more gene. I have the more gene, whatever fucking gene that is. I just want more. I don't really care what you're holding. I just want more.
Which is lust, gluttony, sloth.
Yes, I want more of
and
all.
And pride and greed all rolled up.
This sounds like a good time to me. It isn't sins. You know?
That hits them all. That statement that you just said nails. Nails all the seven deadly sins. Well, I just want more.
This was a normal Friday night when we were drinking.
You know? I just want more.
Greed and
I want
lust.
More than what I can even, my physical body can even handle.
Correct.
I want to poison myself to the point where I'm blackout.
I never stopped on my own. I only stopped when I passed out, blacked out, or ran out. But I never knew. I never said, Dwayne, you're having two. Good. Stop.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't possess that option. I'm an alcoholic, bro. I go balls to the wall. I have greed with everything.
Yeah.
So now remove the alcohol from the equation. I just want, I knew I was super selfish at my daughter's fifth birthday when I was trying to manipulate all the other five-year-olds into giving me the biggest, prettiest piece of cake.
Yeah.
I want the cake with the rose frosting, the rose petal frosting. You guys can kids can have the small squares.
Mm-hmm.
It's her birthday.
Yeah, I mean, we all do that.
Of them are there for her.
We all do that.
And I made it about me.
Mm-hmm. And what's crazy for greed with me is it's never pleased. It always makes you miserable, and it's always lacking. Mm-hmm. Like it's never pleased, like in the sense of like
insatiable.
Yeah, it's like you hear about billionaires and they just want more. Mm-hmm. Like they know they can't, and they're not happy.
They're not happy and they can't run out of that money.
Yeah, I asked a multimillionaire a couple weeks ago that question, are you happy? And they said, what is that?
Yeah.
You know, here's somebody that has hundreds of millions of dollars and is like, what is that?
Yeah. That's wild. And it's also important for me to understand. It was nice when I understood that financial prosperity does not translate into emotional well-being. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean I'm spiritually awake just because I'm financially prosperous. That might just mean I fucking run over people.
Yeah, the greed.
I'm greedy.
Yeah, you can go a long ways with greed.
I think that there's a way to be a multimillionaire with spirituality involved also.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we're aiming for the best version of ourselves.
Yeah,
yeah, we want the good stuff in life, but we want to do it in service to the best version of myself, the God consciousness version of myself. Not making decisions that I'm going to hate myself for later.
Yeah, I'm watching a show with the Yakuza, you know, the Japanese, you know, mafia or whatever you call them. And, you know, they do human trafficking, they do drugs, they do alcohol, they have all these casinos they run and all this stuff. But the fight is always from trying to take territory from each other.
Mm.
I'm going to take this casino. I'm going to take, they're weak. They appear weak now. So I'm going to take.
Yep.
And that is greed in and of itself. So you're preying on somebody or something that is weak in hopes that you can steal something from them so that you gain.
Very good. Yeah.
The opposite of that.
Alchemize it. The opposite of greed
would be complete gratitude and abundance. Like recognizing, and I said this before, recognizing that the pizza can get bigger, which means I can get even more slices. Like Dwayne can have a ton and I can have a ton too. It's not Dwayne have a lot and I have none, or I need to get what Dwayne's got. It's like, bro, it's like, and this is really hard to do. It's like practicing being truly for happy for somebody. And we're going to talk about envy here in a little bit, yes. But practice being truly happy for somebody when something good happens to them. Oof. And you'll find yourself, like with greed, you'll find yourself getting pissed off.
That's a great
when
way.
When somebody gets, you're like, well, fuck him. How did he get that? He didn't deserve that.
Different modality, Chinese proverb. A friend's blessing is a gift. That's a gift for me, mm-hmm. because I get to practice gratitude.
Yes.
I get to practice love. I get mm-hmm. to practice acceptance. I get to practice happiness for somebody else.
That's so good.
Man, you nailed it. Abundance and gratitude, the opposite of greed.
I think Joe Rogan's really good at this. I watch him, and he made a comedy store, you know, and he's a comedian. Yeah. If you ask him first, he'd say, yeah, I do UFC, I do all this other stuff. You don't have a podcast, but I'm probably a comedian. He'd say he's number one that. But he brings new comedians on his show all the time where he has hundreds of millions of views.
Right.
And he's like, I learned this in martial arts, is that you want everybody to get better. Like you're going to share, like in martial arts, he's like in jiu-jitsu, you're helping everybody. Like you want everybody in your dojo or whatever to get better.
Gets better. Yeah.
And then you practice with each other so that you both get better. Iron sharpeneth iron.
Yes.
And he's like, why would I not, with my ability to be able to have hundreds of millions of viewers, why would I not help lift comedy up together?
That's so cool.
And then in turn, guess what happens?
It's lifting him up.
Yes. And that's what
iron sharpens iron.
Yeah, that's what greed doesn't get.
That's powerful, bro. That's powerful.
So let's get into the next one and then we'll be done. Wrath. This one is my problem. I have a problem with anger, resentment. And that is a trigger for me. And when I get triggered, yesterday I had this happen to me. When I get triggered, all I do is make stories up in my head.
Yes, yes.
I'm going to say this to this person. I'm going to do this. I'm going to be this way. And if they talk back to me, I'm going to tell them this. And I don't care what my girlfriend's saying. I don't care what was a text that I need to pay attention to. I'm obsessed over this person and what the fuck they did to me.
Right.
And why the fuck did you say that? You know, it's this resentment that just is this dark fucking evil cloud that takes over me. It's ugly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that's wrath.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much wrapped up in this, bro. Fuck, this is a big one. Anger is usually the face of what? Fear.
Yeah, that's
when,
what it is.
When I'm afraid, I don't want other people to know that. So when it comes to the surface, they don't see me afraid. Mm-mm. They see me angry.
Yeah, that's good.
And then they get afraid because I'm vibrating at that level. So they, you know, they're meeting me at the fear level, at the fear vibration. And usually for us, fear means I have selfish and self-centered fear. I'm afraid of not getting what I want.
Yeah, there you go.
And I'm afraid of losing what I have.
That's it. That's hitting me hard.
Boom. Yeah. I'm afraid of not getting what I want.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid of losing what I have. And if I don't have the presence of mind to acknowledge that, to own that, to take responsibility for the fear, what you see is anger. And
not taking responsibility for it is a form of pride.
And it's like Wile E. Coyote. It's like I could blow this up and it's this massive red herring. It's like this big distraction. So no one has to know how afraid I am. Mm-hmm. And in reality is I just don't know how to address my fear.
I don't know how to address the fear is the lady in the red dress.
Yes.
And then I'm so focused on that. There's a gun to my head. I didn't even realize it.
Yeah. Exactly. The resentment's the number one killer for us. The resentment is like it's a perception alterer.
What happens if you're in a meeting and somebody comes in and they're extremely resentful? They're done for, huh? Like, what does that look like? Do they have to have humility and admit that they're being resentful? What if somebody comes in and they're just super angry and resentful? I imagine you get that a lot.
Absolutely. You know, we just say it takes what it takes. And you can be as uncomfortable as you want to be for as long as you want to be. But if I'm not willing to remove the resentment, if I'm not willing to seek forgiveness, to forgive them, to work on my judgment, there's little hope for serenity. There's little hope for recovery. I'm not going to feel good on the inside if I'm stewing in resentment. Resentment takes more alcoholics out than anything else.
Mm.
That kills more alcoholics than anything else. And I know that to be true. It took me out. I returned to drinking because of resentments many times. I tried to stop for years. And then something would go off. I would be pissed. My mom did this. The ex-girlfriend did this. Can you fucking believe it? Boom. Fuck it anyways. And I didn't know how to handle resentment. I didn't know how to look at it. There's four steps to resentment. First step is I judge someone. Second step is I find them lacking. Third step is I get angry. Fourth step is I get angry again. That's a resentment. So resentment is a refilling. If I'm having a conversation with someone and they're not in the room, it's probably a resentment. So I like to look at the four steps of a resentment, judge them, find them lacking, angry, angry again, as a snake. Now, when a snake bites me, is it the teeth that kill me? Or is it the venom coursing through my veins that kills me later? It's the fourth step that kills me. It's the venom that kills me. If I let that live inside of me, it's going to take me out. It's going to kill me. Now, how do you kill a snake? Do you cut the tail off?
Yeah, right. Yeah. You chop the head off.
Cut the fucking head off.
Mm-hmm.
So I need to stop my resentment as step one. God help me not judge. God help me not judge. God help me not judge. I have a resentment because I went down the rabbit hole with my judgment.
Mm, yeah.
I did not practice.
Oh, that's so good.
I did not practice love, acceptance, and tolerance.
No.
I practiced judgment and fuck this motherfucker.
Yeah, I went down my
ingrained neurological pathway of judgment, 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 judgment. Alchemize it. What's the flip? New neurological wiring. God help me not judge. God help me not judge. God help me not judge.
Well, that's why I like, and we'll close in this. I like Course in Miracles, what they say with forgiveness. It's like just recognizing that something wasn't really done to you.
Yes.
That fucks me up every time. Every time I listen, every time I read that or listen to it, it's like, you're right. It's like, they didn't do anything to me.
That was them and their unconsciousness.
Yes. That has nothing to do with you. Why are you taking it personal?
He too, like myself, is sick.
Mm, that's so good. So we're going to finish up Seven Deadly Sins. We did pride, greed, wrath, envy. We have lust, gluttony, and sloth next, and we'll do that on the next episode.